As we've been looking at the responsibilities of personal evangelism, we've kind of come a long way from some very basic points about just the need of being involved in personal evangelism to the points of talking about things that we would sit down with somebody and discuss. And that's more of where we are right now. And we've talked about the need of understanding God's authority. And in this lesson, talking more specifically about obedience to God's authority. That word obedience is one sometimes that we have to stop and think about. The words, the flow is pretty easy out of our mouth, but to really understand and apply what it means sometimes is a little bit more difficult. God has always required of those who would be His people obedience. And we've talked about the fact, and I think we understand that it's wrong to look at oneself or to look to other men as the authority on spiritual matters, but spiritual authority comes from God. And we understand, I think, that we cannot please God when we worship Him or we serve Him according to our own thoughts, our own ideas, or plans. That has never worked. In Matthew chapter 15, there's a passage here we might just review for a moment. Matthew chapter 15, it's Jesus who is the speaker, and He is addressing those who would be the people of God. This would be the Jews. The problem is that they're not really acting as they should act. It's nothing new. Jesus goes back and quotes from the prophet Isaiah when He says to them in Matthew 15, at verse 7, He calls them hypocrites. Well did Isaiah prophesy of you. This people draws near to me with their mouth and honors me with their lips, but their heart is far from me, and in vain they worship me, teaching as doctrines the commandments of men. It's a pretty simple passage, but it speaks volumes about some issues and problems that man has always had. There seems to be within man that need of religious fulfillment or spiritual fulfillment. There's nothing wrong with that. In fact, I think that's a good thing. I think God has put that within us. The problem comes when we seek our own means of fulfilling that. And that's where there becomes a problem. Even as Jesus was saying, even as Isaiah had said long ago of the children of Israel, Jesus is just repeating the same point because it was still the same problem. You know, these people draw near to me with their mouth. That is, they can say religious things, they can act religious, but Jesus is the one who knows the hearts of men. God has always understood the hearts of men. And Jesus said of these people, their hearts are far from me. And one of the reasons He was saying that is because their worship. Their heart was far from Him, and He says their worship was vain worship. That is, it did no good. It was of no benefit. They were going through the motions. They were doing things that looked religious to everyone. They would have been considered religious by everyone. But their heart wasn't right. And because their heart wasn't right, they did things that they shouldn't do, teaching as doctrines the commandments of men. I have found that to be a pretty important passage to keep in mind. And as we sit down with somebody talking about spiritual things, and we talk about, you know, what do they believe in religion? What do we believe in religion? We have to compare it to the will of God. Because just because something seems to be spiritual, something seems to be religious, just because our worship is fulfilling to us, how many times have we heard this from someone? I like the way we worship. It makes me feel good. It's very emotional. Sometimes it fits our needs, we think. But that doesn't make it right. Just like those that Jesus was addressing so long ago who were doing all the right religious things, but their worship in the eyes of God was vain. It was of no benefit. It did not draw them closer to God. In fact, it moved them farther away from God. There is a very serious warning in this passage. And sometimes when we're sitting down with someone and we're talking to them about what do they believe and how do they worship, and they feel really good about their worship, this is sometimes a place to go right here to this point, this passage, and to talk about it. At the same time, we cannot miss the fact that we need to look at that passage and that we need to evaluate our position before God and how we worship Him, and is it the way that He wants us to worship. Just some points to think about as we get started this morning. You might have some comments about that. What would you say? Bless you. Yeah.
Because at the very beginning, we see Cain and Abel, and one offered a sacrifice that was pleasing to God.
That's right.
And the other didn't.
That's right.
Cain didn't.
That's right.
And we learned from Hebrews that Abel offered his sacrifice by faith.
That's right.
Which means, from Romans 10, 17, that God had given them some instruction regarding what they were to do.
Mm-hmm. I know that seems like a simple point right there, but it's a powerful point, and sometimes it's the simple ones like that that somehow slip away from us. And if we're going to talk with somebody about spiritual things, more than likely, and most often, it is the simple points that need to be made, because if we're not in agreement, if we're not understanding the simple points, we're never going to understand the ones that are more difficult. But these simple principles right here mean everything. We have read a number of times Isaiah 55, verses 8 and 9, where Isaiah penned these words of the Lord. He says, "For my thoughts," this is the Lord speaking, "my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are my ways your ways. As the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts." Simple point again, why don't we get it? You know, that it is God who has the right and the ability to be able to set our course. Our ways are not His ways. And so we need to start thinking about what God wants and expects of us if we are to be the people of God. The Old Testament provides us some very valuable examples. In fact, this lesson, what we're going to do is look at some stories from the Old Testament and see what we can learn. I imagine every one of these are some lessons that you've considered before. But I love the simple stories, the simple points that can be made. And we have some examples here that I want us to deal with that I think are pretty simple, but so powerful. Sometimes when we talk with people, and sometimes we have to be reminded of this too, sometimes we have to be reminded of the importance of the Old Testament. We haven't really talked so much in this class yet about the difference of the Old Law and the New Law, though I imagine everyone here has a pretty good handle of that. Sometimes when we sit down with people and discuss the Bible with them, there's a lot of confusion about what is the difference between the Old Covenant and the New Covenant, or Old Testament and New Testament. And while I certainly understand that we are New Testament Christians, meaning that we are following the pattern that's given to us in the New Testament, we need to not somehow let it pass by or slip by the power of the stories and the lessons of the Old Testament. I mean, the principles that are taught there are just as powerful as what we find in the New Testament, the commands that we find in the New Testament. A couple of passages here that come to mind we have on our outline, Romans chapter 15 and verse 4. A couple of passages that maybe just helps to put in perspective once again the power and the lessons that come from the Old Testament. In a very simple way, in Romans 15, verse 4, the Apostle Paul writing, he says, "For whatever things were written before were written for our learning, that we through patience and comfort of the Scriptures might have hope." What is he talking about? What is the point the Apostle is wanting us to understand here? What do you see? It's interesting when you think about those to whom the apostle is writing. Of course, they did not really have the New Testament to open to so much as that this time. It was still unfolding. These words were still being penned. And so they knew something about that old law, those who were Jews at least. But even those who were not and who were just learning the Scriptures, if they were learning the Scriptures at that time, it was the Old Testament. But they are being reminded here about the importance of those things written before, those things written aforetime, some versions might say, that we through patience and comfort of the Scriptures might have hope. The Bible as a whole offers us hope and comfort because we see throughout the way and the will of God as He is presented to us in a different light. There's some things we have to learn there. Turn a few pages further to 1 Corinthians chapter 10. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, it's the apostle that's writing again, this time to the church at Corinth. And he has spent a lot of time already in this letter really dealing with some issues, some problems with the church at Corinth. And so here again, he's reminding them of some things that have been written beforehand or written earlier about lessons that can be learned. And so he goes back to some Old Testament examples. In fact, we're going to read a little bit more of the passage than I've written on the outline here. Just think about what he's saying as he begins in verse 1. He says, "Moreover, brethren, I do not want you to be ignorant that our fathers were under the cloud, all passed through the sea, all were baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea, all ate the same spiritual food, all drank the same spiritual drink, for they drank of that spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ." We talked about something similar to that in our lesson on Wednesday night. He's just putting some things in perspective about some things that happened to the children of Israel of old. Verse 5. "But with most of them God was not well pleased, for their bodies were scattered in the wilderness. Now these things became our examples, to the intent that we should not lust after evil things, as they also lusted, and not become idolaters, as were some of them. As it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. Nor let us commit sexual immorality, as some of them did, and in one day 23,000 fell. Nor let us tempt Christ, as some of them also tempted and were destroyed by serpents. Nor murmur, as some of them also murmured and were destroyed by the destroyer." What's the idea here? What is the apostle wanting them to see, or should we say, what is the apostle wanting us to see? That's right. You know, it's painful to learn by mistakes. We've all done that. Some of us have done more than our share, it seems, learning by mistakes. But it's a little bit less painful if you can learn from the mistakes of someone else. And we can do that if we will watch others. And I think that's the idea here of what Paul is saying. You know, as he's referring back to the children of Israel and some of their sins and the results of some of those sins even. Is drawing it to their mind.
One time many years ago, the difference between a foolish man and a wise man. The wise man will learn from the mistakes of others. The foolish man insists upon learning from his own mistakes.
Yeah, good point. That is right. So look, there's some things here that are written, as we read before, for our learning. As this text goes on, verse 11, "Now all these things happened to them as examples, and they were written for our admonition, on whom the end of the ages have come. Therefore, let him who thinks he stands take heed, lest he fall." It's like he's telling these brethren, don't make the same mistakes. Don't fail to listen to God. Learn something even from the mistakes of your brethren, is what he's saying. And don't make the same mistakes. And so it's with some of that in mind that we go on and we look at some examples from the Old Testament that are written for our learning. They're recorded so that we can see the foolishness of some decisions that others have made. And let's not make the same decisions. We see in that too, as has been mentioned, I think we learn some important lessons about the character of God when you study through the Old Testament. I mean, we learn about the nature of God. We can see his generosity. We see his love. We see his care and concern for all of his creation. We see that he's a jealous God. We see his anger. We see his disappointment when those who are his people, those whom he has blessed so well and so much, when they don't listen to him and they turn and follow others, we can see the disappointment of God. We can see his character. We can learn very well that he's a just God. We can learn that while he will give tremendous blessings to those who are his people, there are curses that come to those who refuse to follow him. And we see that in a very vivid, in a very real way in the stories of the Old Testament, written for our learning. There's lessons to be learned here. About halfway down the page, during the Old Testament era, God dealt harshly with those who looked to themselves for authority rather than to him. Think about that as you consider the following examples. We'll have some questions, some discussion we need to have about each of these examples as we try to understand here God's authority. You remember Nadab and Abihu? Probably most of us remember them. They were priests. They were sons of Aaron. And it was the sons of Aaron who had been given some specific responsibilities by God. We're going to the book of Leviticus. Leviticus chapter 1. And really here we're kind of jumping around here a little bit as we look at these stories. We can't read the whole text. But we can read a few verses here or there and we can understand why some events turned out the way they did. In Leviticus chapter 1, we're just trying to pick up some points here from the story. Verses 7 and 8, the text says, "The sons of Aaron, the priest, are to put fire on the altar and range wood on the fire. Then Aaron's sons, the priest, shall arrange the pieces, including the head and the fat, on the burning wood that is on the altar." Now, there's more to the story. There's more instruction given. But for our purposes to understand some things, we're just making these points here. It's the priests, the sons of Aaron, who have the responsibility of offering sacrifice, burning incense. They are the ones that God has authorized to do this. God even specifies the kind of fire that should be used. We skip on over to chapter 16. Leviticus chapter 16. And again, we're just picking out a couple of verses to kind of put some thoughts in our mind. Verse 1 says, "The Lord spoke to Moses after the death of the two sons of Aaron, who died when they approached the Lord." New King James Version says, "died when they offered profane fire before the Lord." Or some versions say, "died when they offered strange fire before the Lord." Verse 12 says, speaking of Aaron and his sons, "He is to take a censer full of burning coals from the altar before the Lord, and two handfuls of finely ground fragrant incense, and take them behind the curtain." Talking about the responsibility here of burning incense and what they were to burn and who was to do it. And with those thoughts, we go back to chapter 10. Leviticus chapter 10. You know the story. You probably know what happens right here. We may even be able to kind of paint a picture in our mind here of these events as they are unfolding. These sons of Aaron, as they are about to offer some form of sacrifice. Verse 1, "Aaron's sons, Nadab and Abihu, took their censers, put fire in them, and added incense, and they offered unauthorized fire before the Lord, contrary to his command. So fire came out from the presence of the Lord and consumed them, and they died before the Lord." You got a picture of that in your mind? I mean, I'm not exactly sure what this looked like, this fire that came from the Lord. Is it a lightning bolt? Is it just a big consuming fire? I don't know. And I don't even know that it really matters. I don't think that's actually the point of it. I've heard some go into some great explanation about what really happened here and what it looked like. Well, we don't know. I mean, we can conjure up some thoughts in our mind that might be interesting. But what really matters here? We looked at several passages here, just kind of put in our mind what God has required, what He has commanded with regard to this worship before Him. What just happened? And why did it happen? What would you say?
God punished them for disregarding the direct command that He gave them.
Earl, I'm having a hard time with this. This is supposed to be a loving God. The God that I know is a loving God. He would never do something like this to His people. I'm just not understanding this. Tristan. Fear God? Listen, I'm not understanding this. The God that I know is the God who sent His Son to die for us. This is a loving God who gave up His Son. And now you're telling me that we have to fear Him? I don't get that. I'm not understanding that. What would you say? Has there ever been a time where God has not expected complete obedience? I mean, can you ever think of any time, any period of time throughout the Scriptures where God has not expected obedience? Always, always He's expected obedience. Go ahead, read that.
It says that Moses said to Aaron, this is what the Lord spoke, saying, by those who come near me, I must be regarded as holy, and before all the people, I must be glorified. We have to recognize that we are the created, and God is the creator.
I think we're going to find out, Les. I'm afraid we're going to find out.
Yes, I agree with that. That parents are becoming slack about disciplining their own children, and that's why we see a growing lack of self-control. And everything goes, you know, there's no laws, nobody wants to, there's don't respect authority. I mean, you see these bumper stickers all the time around Asheville. There's a lack of respect.
Tell me what you think about this. You know, because there are some who look at the severity of God and they say, how can this be a loving God? But turn it around the other way. Could God be a loving God? Could He be a just God? If He puts before us some requirements of life, and there are those who live however they want, and He makes no judgment, is that fair to those who are trying to live after Him? I'm not saying how that would be fair. It's certainly not just. And because God is severe in judgment does not make Him any less loving. In fact, and tell me if I'm wrong, but I tend to think that's part of the love of God. That we know with all confidence that if we choose to be the people of God and we live by His statutes, if we live by His will, we know come judgment that we have every hope that God will be fair in His judgment. That's what gives us confidence, where we can know we are the people of God when we accept and when we obey His will. That's part of the love of God. Part of that love also means that those who are not submissive to Him will be separated from Him eternally. That's who God is. Always has been. From the Garden of Eden all the way through the Bible story, it is consistent always. Man's not so consistent. Man struggles. Man tries this and he tries this over here. God is always the same and His judgment is always the same. There are always consequences for sin, always. Ken?
If He wasn't so consistent, then we couldn't have any confidence.
That's right. That's right, because we wouldn't know what to expect. We could have no confidence facing judgment if God were inconsistent, because how would we know what we would receive when we got to judgment if God were inconsistent? But the fact of the matter is, He is consistent always. There was another hand somewhere back here. Darryl, you are Michael. Yeah, confusion. Right. Yeah, because how do they know what is right or wrong? I mean, many of us that have more gray hairs than not, I had to get my driver's license last week. And so the lady says, color of eyes, brown. Color of hair, I've always said, brown. And I said, well, what would you call it, brown or brown? Gray. That's gray. I knew the answer. It just got my driver's license this week. Here, gray. Yeah. Anyway, those with us with a little more experience than others now, you know, have seen with what happens with children when parents are inconsistent. You know, no, you can't do that. You discipline. Next time they do it, and it's okay. What's right or wrong? How do you know? Sandy, you knew all about that with teaching children. You know, I mean, you've got to be consistent. God is that. He is always consistent. There is always consequences for sin. You know, when I think about this example right here, and in talking with people sometimes, it's interesting sometimes what comments come up. You know, I don't understand why God was so harsh. I mean, they did almost everything God wanted them to do. Almost is the imperative word there. Well, you're right. They did almost what God had commanded them. And I mean, we're not talking here about something that was hard, a hard concept to understand. It was not about some matter of judgment. God had commanded. I mean, you think about this. You know, look at your questions. Was it right to worship God by burning incense? Yeah. Yeah, that was right. They weren't doing something wrong by burning incense. That was the right thing to do. Were Nadab and Abihu the right people to burn incense? Yeah. They were the priests, the sons of Aaron. These were the ones that God had commanded, you know, to do this, had commanded that they burn incense. Well, what happened to them, the consequences, and why? Well, they died. I mean, God sent fire out of heaven, you know. But, I mean, they did. They were supposed to, they were the ones to burn incense. It was good to burn incense. What happened? They used strange fire, unauthorized fire. There was a reason. I don't understand. I don't know the reason. But God had a reason for them to use a specific fire from off the altar to put in their censer to burn this incense. Why did they have to use that fire? I don't know. I don't know why. But Daryl.
Mm-hmm. He's always taking it seriously. Mm-hmm. People profane it.
Yeah.
That's
right.
Throughout the scriptures, and that's definitely right. Here.
That's right. They made common something that God had not made common. That's right. Les?
It does seem that there are certain incidences in the record of God's relationship with humans that He makes examples of. And that's because God knows everything. He knows. He knew the hearts.
Exactly. Exactly.
So
it's sort of like, is there maybe more to the story that we don't know?
Very possible.
Maybe so.
But, you know, again, the parenting thing keeps coming to my mind because there were times I overlooked things. Gina overlooked things. And there were other times
you couldn't.
That we say, I can't let this go without some disciplinary action.
Yeah. Yeah. Or as a matter of rebellion.
Or as a matter of rebellion, and that's
mm-hmm.
where we had to be part
of. I understand. And could that be the case sometimes when God, it seems to us, made examples of some, and it seems so unkind and harsh to us? Well, I just don't think that I want to be in a position of trying to judge God as being too harsh. And you said this well, Les. God is the one, we see this all the way through the Bible story, God is the one who knows the hearts of men. And God knows when and how to respond in whatever way. God knows. Yeah, almost like a parallel example, really. Mm-hmm.
On what is good for us.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we don't do that, just never
right.
discipline us. Or
right.
never correct us. It reminds me of the parent.
Mm-hmm.
Like the parent thing.
Yeah.
The parent who would never spank their child or discipline their child because I love them too much.
Yeah.
No, you don't
yeah.
love them too. You don't love them enough.
Right.
I
right.
didn't enjoy disciplining my children. I took no pleasure in spanking them. When
right.
I did it because they needed it.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Good thoughts. What else? Yes, sir. Right. Yeah. Interesting thought with that. You know, I mean, it's whether we don't do what God says, or whether we try to go ahead and do something that God didn't say to help God out, is no different. One is not more right than the other. Both is wrong. Both is disobedience. Both brings consequences. We got to be careful when we try to think beyond God. That's a good point. Yeah, and we have to obey. There's some things that God has said that I don't fully understand. But I don't know that I have to understand. I mean, it's just like, why did they have to use fire from off the altar? I mean, have you ever been burnt by a coal? I mean, everybody, you know, you pick up a coal, you burn, something that's burning, you burn yourself, you know. Well, if you reach over here and you get a coal over here, let me tell you what, it burns the same way. It's just as hot. I mean, what's a coal is a coal. And I don't know what the mind thought was, the mind process here with Nadab and Abihu. Did they just not care? Were they just trying God? Let's see what happens if we use this fire. Well, we found out. You know, this. You know, this is, fire is fire. What's the difference? Yeah, that's right. You worship your way, I worship my way. We all believe the same God, you know. What's the difference? All of these are applicable thoughts. All of these are conclusions that we need to think about. Does it really make a difference how we worship God? Well, what were Nadab and Abihu were leading others in worship? In spirit and truth. Yeah, in spirit and in truth. Yeah, it makes a difference. Whether we understand why or not is not even the point right here. Acceptance and obedience of what God says is the problem. And sometimes, right there, I mean, that is our issue sometimes. That is our problem. That we are just not willing to submit to God. We are not willing to humble ourselves to God. If this is what He says we should do, we have to just do that. Accept it because He is God. Seems like we've said this a few times. He is God. He is the maker and creator of all things. He is the creator. We are the created. We bow to Him. That's the order of things. And Nadab and Abihu, they missed that. What is interesting to me in that third verse, here in chapter 10, Moses said to Aaron, this is what the Lord spoke when He said, among those who approach Me, I will show Myself holy. In the sight of all the people, I will be honored. And the last part of that verse says, Aaron remained silent. That's powerful. God has just given a reminder here that I am God. And I must show Myself holy. And in the sight of all the people, I will be honored. Now, Aaron, the priest, a high priest, his sons have just been killed by God. Aaron didn't say a thing. And as far as I can tell, as the story goes on, Aaron didn't miss a beat. He continued to revere God and hold Him as holy because Aaron knew God. And that's what we need to do. We need to know God. Lord willing, Wednesday night, King Uzziah, our next example. Let's talk about him some Wednesday night. Read these passages, please. I'm just assuming that you're reading these passages beforehand and filling out these little sheets right here. Let's have some discussion Wednesday night on some of these other examples. Appreciate your good comments.